session number 3866, real six.
Mr. Peroni, Reel 6. To what extent did you have contact with other inmates, as it were, than 18B?
Well, next to the camp at Peel on the Isle of Man, immediately adjacent to it was an aliens camp. And it wasn't long before you suddenly looked over the wire and you saw a face that was well known to you, belonging to 18B, walking around the camp of the aliens and having a chat with them, because they'd obviously found a way to get through the wire, and they intermingled and discussed their conditions. I never went across, I never had any conversation, so I can't say much about that, only insofar as I well remember a huddle of 18Bs near a wire, and then suddenly seeing a face who was well known to me amongst the 18Bs walking in the other camp, and I thought that quite extraordinary. But that's initiative for you.
What aliens were these? There were the primarily Jewish refugees, and there were also interned various merchant seamen and so on, Germans and Italians, who were, of course, sympathetic to the German and Italian governments.
Yes, indeed. They were people. The reason why we were separated, of course, the 18B detainee had a British passport, and the aliens had passports issued by other governments, and therefore there was no normal social intercourse permitted between the two groups. And I suppose, to some extent, they were probably as mixed a bag as we were. But I didn't know much about them myself. What I do remember very well was laying in the sun, and we were looking towards Ireland, and, of course, it was very, very pleasant. Just to lie and enjoy the sun and looking out, which was quite a nice view, over towards Ireland. And occasionally you might see part of a convoy moving out to take up convoy positions, I should think. They went out, I think it was called Sir George's Head, but I might be wrong. But obviously it was the channel which led out round Ireland into the Atlantic Ocean, and you would see these ships moving out. But we, to some extent, were enjoying on some days what people paid money to do under normal conditions, to go over to the Isle of Man and lay in the sun and enjoy a good view. And the only difference was that we had the sense of being detained, obviously against our will, whereas the holidaymaker would be have a psychological advantage.
Another disadvantage for you was that there was a likelihood of a German invasion from Ireland, and then you all would have been right in the forefront.
No, I can't recollect anybody ever thinking on those lines at all. You've got to bear in mind that in May 1941, the Battle of Britain was long past. There didn't seem to be anything like the public apprehension of a possible invasion of Britain in May 1941 as there was in July of August of the previous year. So we never thought about Ireland as a jumping off spot at all. I never heard anybody think on those lines at the time.
You said that in Ascot you worked in the laundry.
Hmm.
Could you work at Highton and Peel?
No. No, there weren't any facilities like that. Every house was self-contained, and there were no sort of communal units where the sort of thing that could be done at Ascot could be done. But of course, what was an enormous advantage that Peel had over Ascot was the fact that you could go out, ride on a train, go right across the island to a farming area where you could do a day's farm work under very congenial conditions. So I used to go out on that. I was one of the fortunate ones. I volunteered and got accepted for that. They had a certain number. And by that time, I had grown a beard, which sort of glistened in when the light hit it. And I also had a sort of Davy Crockett fur cap and some of the chaps used to make sort of ponchos from old blankets they found in some of these locked up rooms. And so all in all, we were a rather motley looking group to be marched through the streets. But we went through the streets to the station from the camp in the morning, and a very small guard. I should think there was sort of two at the front, two at the back, and two in the middle, and that was about it, to take you onto the train. And of course, they got a different gauge over there, and it was rather amusing to see these little trains puffing across the countryside. And then, of course, when the chaps saw a girl, obviously that was a major event. So there's whistling and shouting and to get the girl's attention. And then, of course, we landed up on the other side of the island. We disembarked from the train and went to our place of work and started digging the fields or planting, whatever we did there. And some of the chaps, I believed, worked with animals too. But my business was digging the fields. And then you had a lunch on the spot there, and then in the late afternoon you got back on the train and went back to the camp. And we always made a point of singing too. Between the camp and the station, we always sang, because we didn't want anybody in the area to think that because we were detained, we were depressed. So we made a strong point of singing directly we got out of the train as we assembled and marched back to the camp.
What were you paid?
Well, we had, I think it worked out, if you worked the full week, I think you got something like 9 shillings in vouchers, which you could cash at a sort of welfare hut where you could get small things. But you did it more for going out during the day rather than for what you got in terms of money. I believe somewhere or other I may still have one of these old vouchers. I still have got one or two cards. I know I've got one card somewhere which was used as my identification card outside my cell. And I brought that back with me. And also have my authority for my detention in July 1940, signed by, or rubber stamped by, Sir John Anderson.
You said you didn't want people to think you were depressed. Hmm. And you've told me you had a rather fatalistic outlook, but surely some people weren't able to accept it as easily.
Oh, no. There's undoubtedly, there were people who were severely depressed, no doubt about it. And not only were they depressed, but they didn't hide it. You knew that they were, but you, as you didn't feel that yourself, you didn't feel any identity with them. These were rather people who were apt to separate themselves from any sort of group and just sit around moping over their fate. They would probably be people, even if they were in the services, would be just as depressed that they were away from their normal form of life. On the whole, they were a small minority. Small minority.
I can see there's no point in being depressed. I wouldn't be surprised if you felt angry, however.
Well, no. There wasn't any feeling of anger. I think the major feeling that all of us had was the absolute uncertainty of how long this form of life would go on. Because when we were in prison, we could see a man who got 18 months jail sentence for some offence, and we knew that in a given time he would be out. But the difference was we didn't have that feeling. We didn't know how long we would be out. Especially if we'd had a tribunal and we've been our detention was recommended to go on, we didn't know how long it would go on. We had no... That was the major feeling, the absolute uncertainty as to what would happen. At first it was a venture, but then when after you sit around a long time, an adventure starts losing its attraction. And uncertainty was definitely the major feeling that was possessed by the detainees. But certainly not anger. There were some people who said, well, wouldn't we have done the same if we had been the government? You know, they argued the case for what you could regard as the opposition. There were other people who said, well, you know, I could be living in a town which was heavily bombed, I could lose my life. There's an advantage perhaps of being here where there's no bombing taking place. All sorts of attitudes came up. There was no sort of general attitude. It was a composite. It was a collection of individual viewpoints because the people concerned were individuals. There was no collective response to anything. They were very much individual people there. And so you could find a pro-German attitude, you could find a pro-Italian attitude, you could find a pro-British government attitude, you could find no attitude at all. There was a whole collection of responses from this group of people.
You've told me your attitude was rather ambivalent. I think you used the word neutral. And yet, by going out to work in farming, you were helping with the war effort to a certain extent.
Oh, yes, but that wasn't one's primary attitude or comment on the operation at all. One was just pleased that one was able to break up the day by doing something. And that was the thing, that if the war effort was strengthened by it, so well and good. But that wasn't your main concern. You didn't go out to support the war effort. You went out purely for your own personal satisfaction that the day would pass quicker if you were doing something rather than just sitting around or laying in the sun. It certainly didn't worry me if the nation enjoyed a few more potatoes as a result of my effort at all. No, I was, once again, I was quite neutral whether they had potatoes or not.
I presume there were some people who wouldn't want to do any sort of work like that.
Oh, yes, yes. And these were people where that attitude of helping the war effort was important. They just wouldn't go out to strengthen a government that had put them inside without, as they thought, proper reason. Some people thought that they did have proper reason. They said, well, look, I'm pro-German, and the government's detained me because I'm pro-German. That's fine. If it had been the other way around, I would have put them in jail too, you see. So people would argue according to how they thought. And I suppose there were also people who had been detained there whose primary purpose was to go out and help the war effort, because there were, you know, real patriots there who, once they were released, the first thing they did was to go and join the forces. And once they had been cleared by the special branch, Home Office, apparatus, that was it. They just took up their position with other chaps or girls in the services, and that was it. But undoubtedly some of them must have said, no, I'd sooner stay inside camp rather than go out and dig the soil and produce a few potatoes for this crowd, as they would have thought them, you see.
Do you think the government were justified in locking up people that didn't agree with them?
Well, first of all, you've got to think back to 1940 and realise that the events were running at such a fast pace that there wasn't any room for doubt. But I think that in the main it was a case of overkill, that people were detained for which there was no valid reason for the detention. And I would say that what the government could be faulted on, I don't think that under the circumstances of the time they could be faulted on the detention, but they could be faulted on the fact that they kept people in for so long. And I think too that if you've grown up in a society where one's encouraged to think and you make your choice, your political choice, I don't think that you should be detained purely because of your political choice. You should be detained because there is a much more valid case that could be made. So personally, I would say I can understand why the detentions took place. But what I cannot agree with is that they went on for far too long. The tribunals should have been more efficiently organised. The releases should have come at earlier dates. And I think the whole thing could have been cleared up much quicker if there had been a will to do so. But of course, the fate of detainees when a nation's fighting for its life is a very low priority. And it's understandable, regrettable. I think it's regrettable, not only for the sake of the detainee, but I think it's regrettable for a government that is fighting and taking freedom as its policy to fight. I think it's regrettable from their point of view. And I think to a certain extent there were people who spoke up in the House of Commons who felt this way too. They felt it was rather shameful that these things took place in Britain unless they had a valid reason for them to be done.
I wonder what sort of effect this would have on someone, a young man like yourself particularly, who believed presumably in freedom and justice and personal point of view. Then did you find you could forgive the country?
Do I find I could forgive the country? I don't think I ever thought in those lines at all. I never felt that that I had anything to forgive, really. No, I never felt my main feeling, of course, was that I had wanted in the early days to see a negotiated peace take place between Germany and Britain. And one would have thought, I suppose, that because I had Italian ancestors, I would be more sympathetic to Italy than to Germany. But if I had to look back on those days and say which one did you prefer, I would have said definitely I would have thought that the absolute thing that was vital was to have a negotiated peace so that these two great peoples didn't fight each other. That was my main feeling. And I couldn't identify with the war effort, really, because if I had have identified with the war effort, obviously my main purpose in going out to till the fields would have been to supply more potatoes to the war effort, but it wasn't so. My attitude became more and more, I don't want any part of it. I want to be absolutely neutral. I don't want to make any contribution to... well, this is more so when I came out, of course, that I could obviously have done something to make a better contribution than I did, if anything I did could be regarded as a contribution anyway. I was much more feeling more neutral than the Swiss. That was my attitude. I felt very strongly that I didn't want anything to do with it.
You told me earlier that there were maps drawn of the various campaigns. And
oh, yes, yes.
Certain people had access to news and discussed it with others. Was this at Peel Camp?
Oh, yes, yes. We had newspapers delivered to the camp. We had one radio, which people used to take down the news bulletins, and then they were conveyed to the other houses, so that there was a general knowledge of what was going on. Of course, I think we had just as much information as people outside. Yes, and of course, as we had some people who were able to talk about the areas where the campaigns were actually taking place, to some extent we were better off than the people outside. Because we not only had the news as they had it, but we also had the interpretation of the news by people who had lived in the areas where the battles were taking place. People who knew Libya and the areas of the North African campaigns in 41. And, of course, a discussion of what was going on in European proper. In Europe proper. So to some extent we were better off, I think, from the news point of view.
Were there heated discussions between people who wanted different factions to win, different campaigns to take different shapes?
Yes, I think there were times where people who, for instance, if there was a German victory and the pro-German element would obviously be cheering them on, it's rather like, you know, football teams where the side that you favoured was just put the goal in. And, of course, the supporters of that team, the German team, would naturally think, oh, great show, you know, they've done a good job. Sunk a battleship or bombed a town or what have you, and they would think that, you know, that they favoured that. And then, of course, this would put the hackles up of the people who took the opposite point of view. And then, of course, you often found that there was the 18B detainee Italians who certainly in 1940, before any real damage had been done to... Mussolini's armies, they would strut about and march up and down and play accordions they had and sing sort of patriotic songs. And a lot of people thought that this was absolute rubbish, you know. They didn't think they had anything to march up and down about. And they took a rather dim view of that sort of behaviour. So there was a reaction there. But then a lot of people just felt, well, we don't want any trouble at all. Because in a confined space, of course, you do get tension anyway. You do get tension between individuals who know they can't get out of a given area. They get to know the whole area, they get to walk around as much as they can, and there is undoubtedly an underlying tension which sometimes sparked off in a disagreement, even between people who were basically friends, who had perhaps come from the same area, been arrested, come from the same area, but that just the sheer living together under artificial conditions caused the tension which would spark off a disagreement.
Mm. What about tension with the guards or the officers who, using your game analogy, presumably supported the English team?
Well, there was only one major incident on the Isle of Man, and that was to do with the withholding of rations, with the result that some of the detainees got quite incensed about this. They dug up stones, they threw the stones at the guards. The guards were all ordered to load their rifles and point the rifles to the detainees. And the newspapers were quite full of this at the time, because the owner of the Craigmallan Hotel decided to look out of the window and observe this and phone up the Fleet Street papers and tell them of this mutiny that had occurred on the Isle of Man. Of course, it was a great story. And I remember that the lights were left on all night of that particular time when this incident occurred. But within 24 hours, it was all resolved. And that was it. That was the only time there was any sign of conflict between the guards and the detainees. Because normally, the perimeter barbed wire made it impossible for any sort of social intercourse to take place. Obviously, the soldiers were under orders not to talk to the detainees, and as far as I know, anybody who called out to them or tried to start a conversation was just rebuffed by silence. That's my recollection of the time. There was no trouble. There was no anything of a positive nature either, because they were under orders not to talk to the detainees. There was no chance for any sort of understanding or friendship to develop, as it quite easily could have done.